Hey, this is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5 on this Monday. And with the polling places opening at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, we continue FM Talk 106.5's Get to Know the Candidates series. All candidates were afforded the opportunity for an on-air interview. Now sit back and learn more about the candidates who did come in to talk with Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile before you head out to vote.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5's continuing 2018 midterm coverage. We continue our series of interviews and your chance to get to know the candidates. More information and podcast available online at fmtalk1065.com. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and in studio, House Representative District 104, Margie Wilcox in, whose name will be on your ballot coming up very, very soon on General Election Day. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Hey, good to have you here. All right, so much to talk about here with 104. First of all, before we can get started, before we go off on some kind of question and answer tangent, I want to make sure people know where to get more information for your campaign online.
MargieWilcox.com.
Well, that's pretty, that explains itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's talk about District 104, too. If people maybe just moved to the area, aren't familiar with that district, kind of what part of Mobile County are we talking about?
We're talking about Tillman's Corner, Theodore, and part of West Mobile. Cottage Hill Road is the northernmost boundary for 104.
A lot of growth going on there.
It is.
Busy area of busy district inside our area.
Very happy to have the Veterans Center come into the Tillman's Corner area.
You know, I was on a flight the other day and with somebody who had come here and taken a cruise, and she was flying back to, I was connecting through Charlotte, and she works for the VA out of Chicago. And I was talking to her about what was happening here, and she was so excited to talk about that VA facility here. I said, yeah, we got a brand new thing. It kind of rolled out some of the numbers of veterans in our area, and she said, that's fantastic.
It is. It'll be a wonderful resource. I'm proud to have it in our area. I think it's the perfect location.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for our area and what it'll bring, because as people come to it, they'll stop and eat in our restaurants along mm-hmm. the Tillman's Corner area. So it's all good.
And, our folks that had to travel before for certain things or
right.
can do it right here at home.
They get to stay in Mobile. That's the biggest blessing of it all.
Yeah, my late father-in-law having to go to Biloxi for things. But
always.
He could have done.
Yeah, it's a chore.
Let's talk about this and get into some of the local issues, because all politics are local. And people think back, if they do a quick Google on you, things that have been on the list as of late. If y'all have forgotten, remember how many hours we spent on this show talking about the crawfish controversy and whether you could boil or not? And you engaged that, and you had to do that through – it was frustrating for a lot of people. They said, well, why can't we do this locally? It had to have some representation in Montgomery.
Well, it came to a point that it needed –
boiling point?
Thank you. No pun intended. They had addressed it locally, but it was an issue that kept coming back. And for the just to settle the issue, I was up in Montgomery, and I said, oh, my goodness, I'm going to have to weigh in on this crawfish, because I don't believe in government overreach.
Right.
And this was a solution in search of a problem. You know, I found out there had never been a reported illness
right.
in the history of Mobile or the history of Alabama due to a crawfish boil.
Right.
And yet we were putting these, what I thought were some rules that were unwarranted.
Right.
So not only for the downtown restaurants and what they
did. Which
is
a big deal for their businesses.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. But even out in my district, there's a crawfish boil that raises $30,000 a year for cancer research. So
right.
to me, I just thought it is something that was going to, it was encroaching on downtown. It was just going to keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
And we really needed it settled. So I got involved in it, passed it locally, and then, then I did it countywide the very next year. So it took 2 years to get it totally accomplished.
Which is, that's the Byzantine nature of government, even here at a local or a state level, that something as simplistic as health code regulations and where you can boil crawfish and how you're doing it, that takes years. You just said over a year to get something changed.
But yet we had been happily boiling crawfish since the Spanish discovered
That's right.
Mobile.
That's
so,
right. Yeah, well, it's these things that, like you said, I mean, you all of us as regular citizens wouldn't know there was a problem because we'd never seen anything about it before. All of a sudden, what just happened? And they, by the letter of the law, they were living up to the letter of the law, but we never knew that there was that law there in the first place.
Well, there was some regulations introduced by the Mobile County Health Board. They're an interesting legislative animal in their self, because the Mobile County Health Department was established prior to the Alabama Department
of
Public Health.
It's separate, right?
Right. So there's two Board of Healths that have some unique rules about them. So you can't do it locally. You have to do it through their board or you have to do it legislatively.
Let's talk about school buses, what you've done with that.
Well, we're working hard to get all the cameras on the school buses in Mobile County. I passed the legislation in my freshman year for the safety of the children getting on and off the bus, and the safety and the risk management for there's an accident, there's footage. And, you know, if you run that school bus arm, I do not feel sorry for you. You're going to get a citation in the mail.
Are we doing better on that? Do you think there's, I mean, because I know we've talked about it in the media a bunch. Has it brought more attention to it, or are we preaching in the choir, or what are the stats showing?
From what I understand, it's still a pretty bad area. They now at least have statistics on where are the worst places. So
right.
they do an annual study of all the bus drivers, where the drivers keep up with how many times they've been passed. So there's a specific day in April. I think there was 1,600 in the state of Alabama.
You're kidding me.
Right. In one
still.
Day. That was a couple of years ago, but I think it's still pretty bad.
Unbelievable. Just joining us, Representative Margie Wilcox in studio, talking about coming up on Election Day. You'll see her name there, District 104. Let's talk about a couple things that if you are reelected, you'll be looking at in session in 2019. We've been told by many in Montgomery it's going to be a bloodbath, Sullivan.
Yeah.
Things that have been kicked, that were kicked forward from 2018 are going to be in play, plus some new things in 2019. And I want to talk about a couple of them. Number one, because you had talked to me before we started, you wanted to work on some litter legislation. Now, you're going to take this in 2019?
I'm already laying the groundwork. I have been speaking to different groups in Mobile. I'm asking your listeners
mm-hmm.
to help. You know, if they have ideas on how we can tackle the litter problem, I want their input. And the Mobile County Commission, Commissioner Hudson has an initiative. Mayor Stimson has an initiative, and I think there needs to be some updates to the litter laws to capitalize on this momentum. Because
is that something that would there be some Montgomery involvement in that? You'd have to.
Oh yeah, okay. I've already reached out to the Retail Association because just like we talked about before with the crawfish,
mm-hmm.
I'm not for government regulation, but we cannot ignore that litter is a problem, and
sure.
we have some beautiful waterways and resources, green spaces. We're all tired of the litter, and mm-hmm. we've got to do something about it. So we're looking to do something bold. But you do have to think about the small businesses, the grocery stores, you know, your retail, your restaurants. They're unwitting participants in the litter problem.
Right. Well, that's the frustrating thing when we've talked about this even at the city level. And I know I, you know, talked about it a bunch when the initiatives went in under Mayor Stimson. And I said, I understand what y'all are trying to do. And I'm on board. I'm on your team. But darn it. It's frustrating to me when you're going, oh, it's the property management or it's the business that has this responsibility. And I get a little bit of what's being said, but at the same time, it's stinking people throwing stuff out of their vehicle.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, if I sell the thing with the bag, I expect you to put that in a proper place, not sling it out a window.
Well, I've gone to the different businesses. I've made personal phone calls to the people that I know that are in that business,
right.
and I've reached out to their associations. And I asked them if there's, you know, prior to the summer, as soon as we got out of session, I started working on this. And I said, during your summer meeting, please go and meet with your membership and come back and tell me what you can do.
Okay.
So that's the way I've started out.
Let them have some ideas within
right.
their industry.
What
okay.
is, you know, I know it's going to be painful, whatever mm-hmm. we do. But if you could come up with something moving the ball forward,
mm-hmm.
then I'm willing to start there.
That's the first half of Sean Sullivan's conversation with House District 104 Representative Margie Wilcox. As we continue the Get to Know the Candidates segments leading into tomorrow's general election, coming up, the second half of Sean's discussion with Representative Wilcox right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Now part two of Sean's interview with House District 104 Representative Margie Wilcox as we continue to get to know the candidates right here on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's talk about 2019 session as well. I've heard specifically from Matt McCutcheon that lottery is going to be on the docket. It's coming up.
I've heard that too, and I think there's an appetite for it.
Okay, so that's what it takes is an appetite out there. Do we have any idea? Can you give us any kind of inside information? What do you hear? Is it a lottery for schools? Is it for infrastructure? I suggested the other day, if we're looking for issues, how about the unfunded prison issue? I mean, you know, you look at these things, it's always like lotteries are attached to children or schooling, right?
You know, I would think, you know, to me, you got to find out how much money it's going to generate before you decide what it's for. So we've got to have some specific, there's plenty of needs.
Almost like
there's
reverse engineering.
I'd say even you could tackle mental health, and that would have a domino effect on several issues, on the mm-hmm. prisons, you know.
Right.
On quality of life.
Good for you saying that. There's other issues, but if I look around the country, right, mm-hmm. it usually is branded for, because that'll get it through. Whether that's, and I'm not saying that's not
the feel good.
It is the feel good. And this is the tough thing to say for people out there. I'm not saying that that may not be the issue, but I like the idea of assessing how much money and what the needs are. But then I worry, let's say it was for infrastructure. Maybe that's not exciting enough to people or feel good enough to people, even though it should be, for a lottery reason. And I just wonder, will the idea of lottery not be hamstrung by the lottery part? Because I think you're right. There is an appetite for it, mm-hmm. but what it's for.
Right. I've seen some polls, you know, and there is that core group that only wants to spend on education, and whether
right.
that be K through 12 or higher ed,
right.
they seem to be pretty much evenly split on that. You know, they point to the Hope Scholarship in Georgia.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be used for so many things, workforce training. You know, I've listened to a program about Tennessee, what they've used theirs for. So there's many good ideas that you can use it for, but I don't necessarily want us locked into just deciding that it's for education. I'm open-minded on what it could be for.
All right. Is that something do you have any insight into the fact that, let's say y'all pass something in session 2019, mm-hmm. and it gets signed off on by, we would guess at this point, Governor Ivey, gets signed off on by the governor of the state of Alabama. Is that something that in 2020 there's lotto machines in stores here in Mobile County? Is
I would think that it could
that
happen
fast?
Within a year, but you
okay.
do have to have the infrastructure for it and the
right.
governing
I mean,
body of it. But they've done it all over the United States. We're
right,
one of the
you
few,
can.
So it won't be like we're reinventing
the
last, whole program.
Yeah, we're the last ones in this area for sure, right after Mississippi finishes up theirs.
I heard you could join in with other states, too. A couple of years ago when they were talking about it, you could join in, and I think it was even have Georgia administer it for you. To save cost on overhead, you know, join forces on administrative stuff.
I like saving money. I don't know if I trust those Georgians, though.
I'm just telling you, there's a lot of things that you can do with it to make it happen pretty quick.
Let's talk about revenue, too. And I've been hearing the calls from Montgomery that the gas tax is going to come back to the discussion this year for raising the gas tax in the state of Alabama.
Well, we definitely have to have funding for our infrastructure.
And so people know, if they're not familiar, you should be familiar with Margie Wilcox, but, I mean, you have a dog in this hunt, talking about vehicles, right, and gas tax. I mean, this is something that you've worked with over the years.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a very painful prospect for me. But I'll tell you what I've done, Sean. In the last year, the Senate held infrastructure meetings. Senator Marsh set up 5 separate committees on infrastructure. Well, when I went to the first one, Speaker McCutcheon and I was looking, I was like, well, there's only 3 of us. How are we going to divide up and be members of 6 committees? So we split up that first day, but then I decided this is an important issue for my district, our state.
Right.
I went to every meeting of every committee. I spent every Wednesday afternoon.
Wow.
About 2 to 3 hours every Wednesday while we were in session. And then I've driven back up to Montgomery to attend the ones that have happened after we've been in session. I think I've only missed one meeting. But I will challenge anybody in the House of Representatives. I know I was the only one in the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very valuable. One day would be about what counties do. So the counties would give a presentation.
Right.
The other day, municipalities. So I feel like I've worked very hard to inform myself about this issue, and I'm convinced there's a need. We have a need to fund infrastructure.
Well, you know, and I've had some of the people in who have scored the bad scores on our roadways and infrastructure bridges in the state, talking about how much money, not only the deferred maintenance, but what it takes to catch up and then get ahead of this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not in this issue every year. And the fact that what the gas tax last was raised in 1992 in the state, I think it was 92.
I think you're right.
And so that's the last time the gas tax had gone up. But there's so many, what I worry about, like anything, is there are so many angles. So that when we talk about this on the radio, immediately we start talking about electric vehicles, right? So they're on the road, and there'll be an increasing amount of electric vehicles at some level, some percentage going forward. You know, is it less
well,
than 1%?
An exclusive to being a gas tax is not really a fair tax. You've got to come up with something also that your alternative vehicles.
Right. So how do they pay in? Because they're wearing and tearing on the road too.
Right. So there's some propositions going about that there be a license fee
right
to those vehicles so that they capture their fair share.
And then you mentioned the counties, and this is the other wrinkle I think is interesting. Will this turn into, like anything, all politics is local? Where's my cut of the action? In other words, there are some counties, I imagine, that will take in way more of the gas tax by the number of people there that are spending money at a gas pump and, you know, those kind of things. Do they get to retain more of the money because they get more traffic, or is it spread equally for the 67 counties of the state?
Well, fortunately, in these meetings that have been going on for a year, leadership in the House and the Senate has told the cities and the counties that they have to get together and work out a deal between them. You know, that when we get to the legislation time, there's not going to be a fight on the floor. But okay, one of the things that I've proposed every time this has come up is about 7 years ago, I want to say now, we passed in our South Alabama Regional Planning Council a road prioritization plan. So when I first got up there a couple of years ago, you know, I've been in there 5 years. Right. So about 3 years ago, I went to the speaker when we were going to have a vote on the gas tax. And I said, I want the road prioritization plan implemented because I don't want it to be pet political projects.
Right.
I want it to be based upon objective and subjective ideals that we can go ahead and agree upon. So
it like a triage list, like this road needs the work
based
more
on
than
zero
this
to 100.
Right.
You know,
this one needs
all,
it.
Right. This one has
the bridge has fallen down on this road and there's huge potholes. And this one just is a little, you
right
know, worn in
the
surface.
The traffic
right
count, the yeah economic development. Just to give you how one particular project here in Mobile County rose to the top so quickly. The bridge over the railroads on Michigan leading into Brooklyn.
Okay.
Was a fail. You know, was failing.
Yes.
So you had multiple modes of transportation were affected by that.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know,
could affect
I-10 rail,
and
10,
yeah.
local and
yeah
the
and
the
federal
rumored,
right because yeah you I mean it's I-10 you got it's a federal
right
interstate right
and there's okay an airport there
yes
and you also okay had the economic development that Airbus was thinking about coming there so
right
you had that
I see
rose,
what you're doing how this scores up okay
right it scores up high
yeah.
It immediately rose top to our list, and it when it was the ATRIP funds, it immediately, or Tiger funds, one of those
right
programs, it rose to the top of that. And you also, I believe that you should also reward for having buy-in from all levels of government.
Okay.
So if the local city contributes, the county contributes, and the state contributes, and the feds, well, if you have buy-in on all those, then that gives it a couple of extra points, too.
Okay, okay.
You know, so there was, that's the subjective, you know, but the objective is the condition of the road, the traffic count, safety,
mm-hmm,
you know, so there's some hardcore things that there's no mistaking. And then you have your other things that you have to kind of go in and weigh in and give it that appropriate weight.
Yeah. And it's so this is interesting, number one, to see how that process worked and to know that. So the counties and municipalities are now they've been tasked with working out something
right
themselves.
And those are
so
the,
this is not going to be hashed out. I'm not going to want y'all up there hashing it out.
Oh,
in
you might still see some of that. There's
okay
always some of that.
Okay.
But if everybody is negotiating and working in this past year, like I've seen them. I mean, I've witnessed it. I
right
went to the meetings.
You went to, you were the
I
one
went to
at the
meetings
meetings.
I was
right
in there with them. And there was times when they'd get, you know, when they'd ask my opinion. I'm sitting over there trying to be quiet listening. But
mm-hmm
there's times I shared my opinion very, you know.
Right.
I'm very, you know, I have an opinion about it, and I gave it to them. So they've really got to work that out.
Well, there's, yeah, and this is, hopefully all those parties can sit down and find something that is, at least, I don't think anybody walks away from that big of a negotiation thinking everybody won, you know, but did you find something that works, is equitable for your community?
As long as everybody can live with it, and, you know, like I said, when good negotiation is when everybody comes out thinking they didn't get everything they wanted.
Yeah, that's right. That is true. I'll be watching this and then asking you a bunch, probably get you on the phone during,
oh,
during
be
the session
because
I am fascinated with how this is going to work out. Okay, remind folks once again, more information before Election Day they want to find out or contact you. How do they do that?
I have a Facebook page, Representative Margie Wilcox. I have margiewilcox.com. My phone number is 421-8309.
You can also find her in all the meetings that nobody else is in.
Right. I mean, I enjoy going to the meetings. I've been going the last 6 months to every meeting about litter that I could find out about, you know. So
if they have ideas, too, you welcome them, their input on this litter conversation.
Of course. I need their input.
All right. Very good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. State Rep 104 running for office. So you come in for 104, Margie Wilcox. Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5's continuing 2018 midterm coverage. We continue our series of interviews and your chance to get to know the candidates. More information and podcast available online at fmtalk1065.com. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5. We continue to talk to the candidates as we get ready for Election Day and joined by Carlos Finley and Judge Carlos Finley, running for Circuit Judge for Mobile County. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me today, Sean.
Okay, you do a lot of this. You do the education stuff. You educate people, so it's my chance to ask questions here. Circuit judge, what does a circuit judge, as we look at all different judges, what does a circuit judge do?
The circuit judge is the highest trial court in the state. So circuit judges handle criminal matters for felonies and civil matters with $10,000 and above in dispute. We also take care of appeals from the municipal courts as well as the district courts.
That's a busy schedule.
Very much so.
Because, and we're going to go through this as your time from being an attorney and a prosecutor and also a judge now. You're working with City of Mobile as a judge.
That is correct.
So these are going to be maybe something that would go on appeal from that court would go to a circuit level.
That would be correct. It happens on a regular basis.
Now, as you've got, let's kind of walk through this, because one doesn't just step in. I mean, the idea of a judge is somebody who is sage, has wisdom, has obviously the book learning, too, to go with it. So how'd you arrive at this point to be a judge right now and look to go to this level of circuit judge?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. Judges are held to a higher standard than lawyers, and they should be. But experience matters not only within the legal realm, but also life experiences. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, a judge should be a person who's sage and experienced. So for me personally, I'm a veteran. I worked in a paper mill. You're very welcome. I worked in a paper mill for 10 years while getting my undergraduate degree. And I also worked as a circuit judge's law clerk while in law school. So I understand what happens behind the chamber door from a very early stage in my legal career. Then I went on to be a prosecutor for Mobile County at the state level. There are a lot of prosecutors out there who do prosecution at the municipal court levels and things of that nature. But it's important to know that you've got a prosecutor who's handled felony cases. Mm-hmm. And from there, I've also worked in the civil arena and handled cases both at the state level and at the federal court level. I've handled multi-district litigation cases where you've got different federal districts that are all working in consort. And of course, I am a municipal court judge. So all of those things put together, in our opinion, make me the most qualified candidate.
Well, you've been putting in the time and get the experience. And you say something in one of your ads I heard, and it makes me think about this from your time as a prosecutor and attorney. You talk about the difference there for a judge versus being in the game versus being the person who calls balls and strikes.
That's correct. That's spot on. You know, as a judge, you're not on anyone's side.
Right.
You're not on the plaintiff's side. You're not on the defendant's side. Not on prosecution's side. You're not on the defendant's side. You're there to rule on the rule of law. And that's something that is most important as a judge, that you stay neutral. Mm-hmm. You're not on anyone's side. I'll say that again. In any way, politically or in the courtroom. And so it's very important to be able to have a judge who understands that and, most importantly, has a record of doing such.
Yeah, the rule of law. I mean, this is something that is gets thrown around a bunch. People talk about, people like me always are kind of spouting off about rule of law, but it's important to me for several reasons. Number one, to define who we are as a people and the rule of law,
yes,
what that means, that makes us different than other places.
Most definitely.
Right? That it's not a person, it's words, right?
Well, the rule of law is what makes our system of jurisprudence the best on the planet. That's what sets America, the United States of America, apart from other countries. And also that jury, because those are people just like every one of us. And one thing that I wish people would take jury duty a little more seriously, because a lot of people want to just get out of it. And that's the power of our country. That jury is as powerful as the judge, which is why everybody stands up when the jury comes into the courtroom, just as they stand up when the judge comes into the courtroom.
That's interesting. I mean, because while we're individual citizens, I guess we're representing something bigger than us as individual citizens at that point.
No questions. E pluribus unum.
As we talk about the rule of law, too, it's something that look at the kind of the questions around the judicial branch. And I've long argued that there have been many duties that have been moved from the legislative branch by de facto to the judicial branch, but it's there. And a lot of things are being decided. And even we talk about this at a federal level, but a lot of questions end up coming in front of judges, right? Big questions.
They do, but I'm glad you distinguished federal and state.
Right.
And the appellate courts as opposed to a trial court.
Right.
And that's the difference with a circuit court. It's the highest trial court in the state.
You're going to rule on the rule of law as it is written.
That is correct. I am bound to do that.
Right. And then if it goes beyond that, that's when those questions are figured out. But, I mean, your job, you're tasked with, here's the rule of law, here's what it says, here's how we apply it.
That is correct. The judge is the trier of law. The jury is the trier of fact. And the judge gives the jury the law to rule upon. Anything in dispute beyond that will go to the Circuit Court of Criminal Appeals if it's a criminal case, or the Circuit Court of Civil Appeals if it's a civil case. And the difference between criminal and civil, of course, is criminal cases deal with freedom or life. Civil cases deal with money damages. And if it can't be figured out at that level, then we have the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama.
Just joining us, talking to Carlos Finley, running for circuit judge for Mobile County. And remind folks, too, if they want to get more information, they're riding down the road or something, they just Google your name, or what do they do here?
You can Google my name, and there's a lot you can pick up if you do that. However, you can go to finleyforcircuitjudge.com, and you can see us on Facebook at Carlos Finley for Circuit Judge 2018. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at KSharkFin1.
That's the first part of Sean Sullivan's interview with candidate for Circuit Court Judge Place 6, Carlos Finley. Coming up in just a minute, part 2, as we continue to get to know the candidates, right here on FM Talk 106.5. Now the rest of Sean Sullivan's conversation with Carlos Finley, candidate for Circuit Court Judge Place 6, as the Get to Know the Candidate series rolls on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, as we talk about the job of judge, which you have the job now with the municipal level, moving to the circuit, what do you see as being, what comes in front of you more as a judge? Obviously you see the trends of the community. You're the judge.
That's correct. Probably the thing that most comes before me are obviously disputes between people. That's one of the biggest issues that we have to deal with, whether it be a domestic violence situation or an assault situation. People disagreeing on any given number of issues are the things that we are addressing most. Second would be, of course, your marijuana charges at the municipal court level. Because at the municipal court, we handle misdemeanor crimes
right. And
violations of city ordinances, as well as traffic violations. And so traffic violations can lead to many of those other matters.
Okay, so as you look at that, do you see anything going forward that in a role as circuit, in the circuit court, that you would have probably seen the same things, but obviously at bigger levels, right?
Indeed, because, unfortunately,
more money, bigger crime, those kind of things.
Correct. Unfortunately, domestic violence matters can end up as a felony murder case.
Right.
Or
we've heard those.
A misdemeanor theft case can quickly become something of a felony level just by the amount in question that the thing that is stolen is worth.
We're talking about sage and wisdom in a judge's shoes. And also, I would argue that having that wisdom about humankind and where you live is important. And, your roots are very deep here.
Very, very deep. I'm a fourth-generation Mobilian. I'm a product of the Mobile County Public School System. I started my collegiate career at Bishop State Community College and graduated from the University of Mobile. As much as the legal acumen that I bring to the table is important, what's as important is the fact that I understand real people. Mm-hmm. I worked in a paper mill for 10 years with people from all across, South Mobile County, North Mobile County, as well as some people that lived in Mississippi and Florida. But having that kind of experience dealing with different people, and of course being a veteran, you're dealing with people from all over.
Right, you've been, whether with the Coast Guard or at the mill, you've been put with a bunch bunch of people.
That is correct. There's not too many demographics that I have not come in contact with.
I'm sure that's the same now. And then you're on a trend because the Coast Guard doing that, you're doing that at the paper mill, and as a judge, you're seeing,
Sean,
people from everywhere too.
It is most important that I understand life as people are living it, because justice lies between the facts and the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important that a judge understands that life happens. And it's so important that a judge can come from a position where it's not just all law. The rule of law is what I'm bound by to rule upon. But understanding life and life circumstances and what people are going through and those types of things, that's the wisdom that you can't get from the books.
Now, what about that? Okay, so this is going to be more subjective side of this. But as a judge, being in that position, have you seen the situation where you've affected somebody? You've ruled on the rule of law, but you've made a suggestion. You've nudged one way or another. And then you see that person turn over a new leaf or something. Do you get that satisfaction?
You do. And sometimes, that comes with time, number one. But the thing about that is that you've got to make sure that people understand that there are consequences to their choices.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do any good to smack a person on the wrist and send them on about their way. You've got to ensure it's like being a parent
mm-hmm.
in many instances. You've got to make sure that child understands what they've done wrong and that there's a penance for that.
Yeah.
And they've got to pay that penance. And one of the things that I really enjoy is when people come back to me, and it happens often, and you have to be careful because you don't know how the person's going to be approaching you.
Right.
And they go, "Judge Finley?" And I go, "Yes." And they go, "I was in your court." And so the next thing comes, well, okay, what's going to happen here? But oftentimes it's, you were fair with me. I was in the wrong. I understand why you did what you did, and I'm not going to do that again.
There's got to be some satisfaction in that.
There
For a
is.
Very hard job, there's got to be some satisfaction in that.
Anything that's worth anything in life is going to be hard to do.
That is for sure.
And our children need to understand that.
keep on with that. I agree. Once again, if people going out to vote, why should they vote for you for circuit judge?
They should vote for me for circuit judge because, A, I'm the most experienced candidate. They should vote for me for circuit judge because I'm the candidate who's giving back to our community the most. I didn't just start being involved in all of the things that I do because I'm running for judge.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. Just look at the website, which I know is not all of it, but I mean, holy cow, the places you are.
Well, with much responsibility, you have to make sure that you utilize that experience for our community. It's so important that we give back because there's a lot of people in need. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about money, because there are many situations you can't just throw money at.
Right.
You've got to get your time in there. And especially when we talk about young people, they need to understand that there are opportunities as long as they stay in those books and they gain that knowledge. But there's so many times where their immediate surroundings don't support that. And so what I like to do is to get out among those young people and let them know that, hey, at one point in time, I was a kid in Mobile County Public School System, just mm-hmm. like you. At one point in time, I was a veteran, just like you. Because some of our veterans are very young. They're 22.
Yeah.
And that you've got the possibility and the capability to accomplish anything that I've accomplished. I've had young men in my court who were charged with misdemeanor crime and are 21, 22 years of age, and I got the opportunity to tell them that, I didn't start going to college until I was 23.
Yeah.
So whatever you're doing now, you've got an opportunity here to put that behind you, put your nose to the grindstone, work your hind parts off, and do what I'm doing or even greater.
That kind of messaging is so fantastic. We need to talk about that more going forward. And let's, once again, as the people go to vote, it's experience. It's giving back to the community. And more information, once again, if they go online, website.
FinleyForCircuitJudge.com, Carlos Finley for Circuit Judge 2018 on Facebook, and at KSharkFin1 on Twitter and Instagram.
All right, very good. Thanks for being in here today.
My pleasure, Sean.
All right,
Thank
Carlos
for
Finley, running for Circuit Judge right here on FM Talk 106.5.